Peter Gagg, who drives it through. Oh, that's a magnificent goal, a sensational goal by the Millwall captain, Mitchell van der Gagg.
We had the high notes on the park. It was, that's how we became a great team together, you know. It was just unfortunate we never won anything.
Lane's in trouble, there's Steve Kirk. The super sub has done it again, and Millwall are back in front.
Without supporters, you cannot play a game. They are a very, very important part of the club.
Jukovic on the chase, might get there. Handel is with it. Jukovic! Oh, wow! Oh, wow! Lukas Jukovic!
I remember to this day, it was unbelievable, and that's another reason I love going back to Fir Park, because you do get to interact with the supporters again, who were wonderful for me.
Chance here for Motherwell. This is Pettigrew, outnumbered though, still has it. Chance of a lifetime for Pettigrew, and it is there!
Yeah, obviously being on the podcast is everything I've dreamed of.
Goes through the middle though, Marvin Johnson. Defenders backing off. Took a deflection!
Hello and welcome to the MFC podcast. Tonight, myself, Jane Busta, I'm delighted to welcome along another debutant, David Borland. How's things, pal?
Not bad. How's yourself?
Yeah, I'm doing fine. Jay Busta, how's you guys?
Aye, all right.
I get it now.
Well, it's another podcast where we have to look back on a very disappointing weekend for the football club. A 5-1 defeat at home to Dundee. We knew we were struggling, Jay, we knew that we're in poor form, but given that it was 5-1 at half time, it was a despicable first half performance. Very few, if any, can come away with pass marks from that, what was a complete and utter shambles. It's pretty difficult to get a head around quite how quickly things are escalating, how bad we've got, because you look at the squad, and on paper, I don't think we're a poor squad. I don't even think that the team, with the exception of an inexperienced back four, is a poor team. So why have we got to this stage? And more importantly, how do we try and turn our fortunes around?
Well, the pressure's on with that question. I don't know. It's farcical. You know, the game itself was, I think, that a game that we'd probably pinpointed, you know, a month or two ago, because we all knew the kind of run that we were facing, you know, against Rangers, Celtic, Hearts, Aberdeen. And, you know, a home game against Dundee was effectively pinpointed as a very, very important game, but also a game that we could, you know, source some points from. It was a game that I think we were still fairly confident that we could win and take all 3 points. And so, and again, I'm going to repeat just what I seem to be saying like almost every week now. There's a manner of losing a football match that you can still accept to a certain degree. We're Motherwell. We will lose football matches. That's a given. And if you do so in the right manner, you can accept that. But what we do far too often is that we lose in completely unacceptable, you know, fashion. Whether it was, you know, 7-0 at Celtic Park, 6-0 at Tynecastle, the 7-2 up at Pittodrie last week, or 5-1 down, you know, at half time against Dundee. It's not acceptable. It's beyond belief. And when you factor in Graham McGarry, when he was on the podcast last week talking about how Mark McGee had made a comment in relation to that 6-0 at Tynecastle about how, you know, perhaps we just need to accept that we are a team who has the ability to lose, you know, 5-6-7-0. That's absolute nonsense. There is no, I don't believe for a second that there's any football manager that should be accepting that. And yet, you could see exactly what Graham was meaning when, you know, when the third or the fourth and the fifth went in. You actually saw the Motherwell players, you know, failed to respond. There was nobody screaming, there was nobody shouting, there was nobody who looked as though they had any real passion or even, you know, any real embarrassment at what was going on. It just seemed, you know, me and Buster were talking during the game about how at times it felt a bit like a training game, or the mentality was, you know, a training game or a game that just didn't really seem to matter. And that's what's unacceptable. It was just the whole thing from start to finish was absolutely shocking. And it's becoming far too regular an occurrence. I think on the radio afterwards, they were discussing how I think we've conceded 17 goals in four games. That's incredible. That is just not acceptable. And just the response from the players didn't suggest that. You know, I don't want to say that you know, a lack of caring. I'm sure that even just personal pride, none of the players on that park would have been happy losing the way they did. But there just didn't seem to be any reaction to it. There didn't really seem to be any belief or any desire to at least put a bit of effort in and to at least, you know, kind of drag ourselves back into the game. We were defeated as soon as, you know, as soon as Jules lobbed the ball over Samson. The reaction from the players, the body language to the players just kind of suggested that, oh, well, there's another goal conceded. And it just kind of went downhill from there, even though we managed to get back into the game. We never really looked as though we believed that we could do anything other than get absolutely horsed. I think we missed McManus massively. We probably missed Lansley as well because, again, there was nobody on the park, you know, being a leader. I think me and Buster ended up trying to work out who the captain was after about an hour because it suddenly dawned on us we had no idea. It was just, it was absolutely shocking. And now we've got into a situation where I am genuinely beginning to think that this is the year that we'll go down because we don't look like a team that is capable of winning a football match, regardless of who it's against. And that, you know, can only mean one thing.
Buster, we've talked about it in the past that sometimes the manager can kind of take a bit of the flack away from the players, whether it be via his actions or just due to the fact that he has quite a divisive character. He splits the support. In fact, I don't think he even splits the support anymore. I think it's very obvious that the support have turned on the manager and they badly want a change. But for me, when the players cross that line and the referee blows his whistle, it's down to the guys on the park. And I just saw no determination, no fight, just basically no effort to try and turn things around. Lou Moult, and I believe also Carol McHugh, took to Twitter to apologise for the performance. Lou Moult is the furthest individual at the football club away from it. We should be apologising because he ran himself into the ground, but the rest of them just at times look like they're going through the motions. We lose a goal, they saunter back into position as if they don't have a care in the world, and it's disheartening to see. And I think it's actually kind of one of the prevalent reasons that I'm beginning to just lose a bit of care for it. I didn't feel as disappointed as I normally would after a heavy defeat. It was the same after the Aberdeen game. I'm losing a bit of the kind of passion for the game, and I think that is basically from watching guys that don't seem to be playing for the jersey. They don't seem to be, I don't want to kind of say they're throwing in the towel, but they don't seem like they're trying particularly hard, it must be said.
Well, you know, you make a few good points here, and it certainly does, as you say, come across as if, oh, we've lost another goal. Right, let's go back to it. Oh, there's another goal. Let's go back to it. You know, there was no one who showed any emotion at all when, you know, when we were losing these goals. There was not one person got angry. There was not one person who even looked sad, I suppose. They just sort of just turned and, you know, turned and walked away. It's, you made a good point, Rob, about Martin McGee. I think, to be honest with you, that's, you know, McGee has to go for me. I don't think we're going to sack him. I don't think he's going to quit. But, you know, his contract's up in the summer, and regardless of where we finish, I think he's, you know, his time has to come to an end at that point. It's not so much a fear, but I think that his goals have been set out to finish 10th. If he finishes 10th, you know, that's going to be seen as he's met his goals. Are the club then going to be looking at speaking to him to renew his contract? I don't think that would be a wise move. He took to the press yesterday after the game, which, you know, I wasn't really expecting. I thought he handled himself pretty well. You know, me and Jay listened to it when we were driving home, and we said that, you know, we thought he handled it pretty well. He also said on the Mullow YouTube channel, you know, these are the only guys we had available. Don't get me wrong, these are my guys. I have to take responsibility for it. But the fact is, he's, you know, nothing's changing here. We don't look as if we don't look as if we're trying, basically. And as you says, there's only so much that McGee can do. Unfortunately, he's not getting anywhere near what he possibly could be doing. But once the players go across that line and onto the park, it's then up to them. I've been saying that all season, but it's just utter shite, to be honest with you. There's no fight. For the first 10 minutes, I thought we were looking pretty decent chasing the ball about. You seemed like we were going to, you know, put in a sort of a quick high pressing game. And then, you know, when we lost the goal, when we lost the first one was just a stupid error, I suppose. But after we scored our goal, we just seemed to capitulate. And as Jay said, I know yesterday to me at times, two or three of their goals, there was guys just queuing up to hit a shot. And that's exactly what was happening. The big, tall, strong guy, Haber, ran or two centre-halves right. I don't really want to turn on any of the players, but Zach Jules has a terrible start to his career. I understand, you know, other than getting away the penalty, he was apparently pretty decent at Parkhead, but that's now three games in a trot, three goals he's caused. I don't honestly know where we go from here. And as Jay says earlier, you know, this could be the year that we finally get relegated.
David, it's hard, isn't it? Because as much as you don't want to single out individuals, the back four yesterday had a real afternoon to forget. I think Karen McHugh coming into the centre of the defence in the second half did steady things somewhat. The interesting thing for me is, though, Mark McGee saying that he's got no other options. You look at the likes of David Ferguson, who came in last season and the season before that as well, actually, and performed fairly well. You've got Luke Watt, who's had opportunities and has been admittedly a bit of a mixed bag. Louis Lang left the club and has joined Inverness. Kieran Kennedy has just been completely frozen out, whether it be through kind of continued injury, and then apparently was back and again hasn't been anywhere near the team. So for all he says that he had no other options, there was options there.
It's a strange one. For one, I'm led to believe that Carl McHugh actually played captain yesterday. I've not actually been able to confirm that, but from what I'm told, it was certainly him. He's played the majority of his career at centre half, and you're right, he did stabilise the defence. But I think, without trying to single out one player in particular, I do think that Chalmers had a game to remember, shall we say. And I think it's quite worrying how much we rely on having Hamill in there, and he's not really played for the last two seasons. So I don't really see any option apart from having McMillan play left back for the majority of the season, and even then he's played all over the park this season. He seems to be McGee's new favourite toy, to use that expression, but I don't think Lyon could certainly do that bad a job. I'm not saying he was phenomenal while he was here, but he was an option. On the topic of David Ferguson, I saw him for the under-20s not too long ago, and he was the only overage player on the park that day, and I wouldn't have said, looking at him and not knowing who he is, I wouldn't have said that he would have been the one that was overage. He was certainly outclassed by the lad standing next to him, and maybe for him it was a night to forget. So if he's not cutting it at that level, I'm not entirely confident he can do it when he's put up against a lad like Haber or any other centre-forward in the league for that matter.
See, just going back to McGee, Buster, the post-match press stuff confirmed that there's Chairman Jim McMahon has been unwell. I think he's actually was still in hospital yesterday, so you can't imagine that the club are having any meetings without the chairman being present for a decision like the future of the manager. Do you think that might come into play, that you might get during the week, and then perhaps if Mr. McMahon's in better health, do you have a meeting then and decide the manager's fate? Because, as you said, the results are that poor just now. I don't know if you can wait to the summer. I think it's got to be an instantaneous thing now, where the place needs an overhaul in terms of a fresh approach, and I don't think Mark McGee is the man to oversee that. I think that there's a kind of attitude of complacency that's snuck into the place, and now it's kind of really taken over, and that is reflected in the horrendous results we've had recently.
Well, I wasn't actually aware of, you know, Jim McMahon's poor health, so I've had a busy weekend, sorry, so hope he gets better quickly. But to go on the subject of, you know, whether or not that's causing any or holding back any decisions to be made or anything, I honestly don't think so. I don't think there's any way we're going to sack Mark McGee whatsoever. From what he's, from the, you know, what he says in the press, you know, he's on Saturday in the radio, he quite clearly said, you know, I'll be going back to the training next week unless somebody tells me otherwise. So I don't think in either of those, I don't think either of those scenarios would crop up, whether he gets sacked or whether he resigns. To be fair, at one point during the game when we were getting hosed, I turned and said to Jay, you know, I think he might walk away this evening. He obviously came on the radio and shot me down immediately, but you know, from hearing that, then I just tend to think there's no chance he's going to resign. But as you says, I think that there does need to be, things do need to be looked at, and it's one of those situations where, you know, if we change it just now, is it going to get any better? And do we have, you know, do we have the time and the, you know, sorry, not the time, but you know, what I'm basically trying to say is that, is it going to be too late by the time the summer comes round if we end up getting relegated?
Yeah, Jay, the atmosphere around the place is very poor just now as well, isn't it? The protests actually started during the game, which I'm not 100% sure I agree with, to be honest, but looking at the people that made up the protest, particularly the part of the protest that started while the game was still ongoing, it seemed to be very much a younger element of our support, so maybe there is a bit of kind of youthful exuberance there where it's, I'm not accusing them of making a scene, it's just more, I think the younger members of our support have perhaps been spoiled in recent times, whether it be European trips or even the season where we did struggle under Ian Barraclough and Stuart McCall, it ended with the two brilliant playoff wins, so perhaps papered over some of the cracks at that given point in time. So it's hard if people do start voting with their feet and moving away from going to the football. The team needs all the support it can possibly get just now. There's also the situation with being a fan-owned football club as well, that the fans do very much have a say in how the club is run. So it could be the first kind of sign that fan ownership has really kicked in at Fir Park, where the fans actually start to use their voice in more ways than one, because they do have a vehicle to do so.
Well, I mean, and firstly, in terms of you know, the folk protesting, I'm fully, although I wasn't particularly interested in taking part myself, I'm, you know, perfectly happy. You know, if folk feel, you know, strongly about it, to go and protest, because that's, you know, something you've got a right to do, not just in football, you know, about anything. And I'm not, I, like Bust, I said earlier, I agree with Bust, you know, for me, McGee's time has now run out. I agree completely that he won't be sacked and he won't resign. I would like to think that we'll, you know, go our separate ways in the summer. But as someone who doesn't want Mark McGee to continue as Motherwell manager, I can't, and thought that the game yesterday was completely unacceptable, I'm then not going to shoot down anybody who decides to go and protest about the manager. I think it's perfectly, you know, anybody's perfectly within their rights to do so. Particularly because, you know, although there is that kind of divisive element and a lot of people haven't liked McGee from the start, including myself, but I have always said that what he is like personality-wise has absolutely no bearing on his ability as a football manager. If he does a good job, then I am more than happy for him to carry on. But that you know, he's been a manager for a fair amount of time now, and now you have a protest. So the protest isn't about Mark McGee necessarily. It is about what is happening on the park. You know, the same way that, you know, the protest when Malpass was there, for example. It was because it was unacceptable what was happening. And it's the exact same. It's what happens. Fans have a right to protest against their manager if things are you know, going well. And it's not acceptable. I mean, it's just, it's unbelievable to think that we are a team that can ship the goals and you know, lose by the number of goals that we're losing. And then you hear, you know, on last week's podcast about how McGee just sort of, you know, confirms that we're a side that will do that from time to time. And it's just, the whole thing is just rotten like that. You're right when you say about the atmosphere. And once it gets to that stage, I don't think there's any way back. You know, once you are at Fir Park and the majority of the home support is, you know, singing about Mark McGee being a wanker and ironically cheering when, you know, things are, when Samson's catching a ball and bursting into spontaneous laughter when Speedy on the tannoy asks, you know, for people to vote for their man of the match. Once you get to that point where it actually goes beyond, you know, it goes through the phase of poisonous and that kind of horrible atmosphere and then comes out to another side of just sheer hilarity. You know, it almost becomes amusing and people can't quite believe what they're seeing and what they're experiencing, and so it becomes laughable. And once you get to that stage, I just don't see how you can get back from it. I don't see how Mark McGee is possibly going to, you know, get any fans back on side, and that's just the nature of the game, unfortunately. So, you know, I don't think youthful exuberance or anything like that's got anything to do with it. If I thought that there was a chance that it would have an effect, then, you know, I would maybe have been round and hung about with the protest. As it is, I don't think that there's any chance, like Buster says, there's any chance that we'll sack him. In terms of the fan ownership thing, I'm not entirely sure whether, you know, that really comes into it. Fans protesting about a manager, whether it was chucking season ticket books onto the park, and then going round to the main stand and protesting about Malpass. You know, that was obviously happening long before fan ownership was even thought of. So I don't really link the two there. But no, I'm more than happy if folk are still coming along at Fir Park and are absolutely, you know, furious at what they're seeing and they want to go protest, then, you know, more power to them.
Yeah, I think it's more the fact that it started while there was a game ongoing and that there was a banner already made ahead of it. Well, unless someone went home and very quickly made a banner to bring along to Fir Park, but it just seems a wee bit kind of almost that they were waiting for the event to happen and had preempted the fact it was going to happen.
Well, they were right then.
there's no taking away from that, but I think we all kind of went in. Well, I certainly felt the feeling was that we were fairly optimistic that we could turn it around, and even elements like the arrival of Stephen Robinson and things like that, I think that pretty much put to bed any chances at that point in time anyway that McGee was going to be away any time sooner than the end of the season. So it just seemed a bit strange to me, but as I say, each to their own, and as you rightfully say as well, they're more than entitled to protest at any given point, but it just seems like the negativity is just completely the overriding emotion at the club just now, and it's just quite an unsettling place to be. It's there's very little to be positive about, and that is quite concerning.
Well, I think, Andre, I do. I mean, the whole idea of the protest sort of kicking off at halftime, you know, it's slightly strange, mainly because the people that they're effectively, you know, wanting to grab his attention are probably still at the game. So, you know, I can kind of understand that point, but I think that's just the nature of being horsed 5-1 at halftime. You know, the folk, they just didn't want to be there any longer. I don't think there's any sort of real reason to other than that. It was simply a case of, right, we're getting beat 5-1 by Dundee, I've got absolutely no interest in, you know, staying beyond half time, so rather than doing the protest at full time, we'll go do it now, which again I think is fair enough. You know, surprised that myself and Buster, obviously we weren't sitting with you, Sparrow, but I presume you made it to the end as well. I was quite surprised that we did made the full 90. But you know, if people want to leave at half time because it's 5-1 and go protest, then so be it. I mean, it got the media coverage. It might not have, you know, got the desired effect of McGee being sacked, but it was reported on the radio, it was on Twitter. And so, you know, in that respect it was a success.
We made it to the end of the match. And as we said before as well, it's because Junior came up to us and we were talking to Junior for most of it. But even as I was sitting there watching, the game was dead. Dundee knew they had won. they didn't have to push harder, you know, they didn't have to use up any extra energy. And there was, I don't think we even looked at scoring at all. You know, it was basically, as you said earlier, Jay, you know, at that point it was basically a training game. You know, it was like, just kick the ball out and waste time, see what happens and get to the end of the match. And I think, as I say, you know, if there had been any more goals for Dundee, we would definitely have left at that point. But the only reason we hung about was just to, you know, have a chat with our old mate.
Not to butt in, but I thought it was quite interesting, particularly in the shop afterwards where I work, because, you know, people are coming in usually after the game, and depending on the result, you're obviously going to be happy your team's won, and the exact opposite if they've lost. But, you know, there was no sense of positivity whatsoever. You've got folk asking for McGee out T-shirts and whether or not we sell them. And the entire atmosphere in there was just poisonous. And I've never seen it quite that bad. We, you know, you have people in after, I'm trying to think of the bad results. There's a bit too many to count on top of my head. But, you know, you come in. The only thing I can equate it to, actually, is the 0-0 draw with Kilmarnock, when they were saying, you know, it feels quite bad to have played so well against Celtic before and then come to have Kilmarnock at home perform like we did and get a 0-0 out of it and obviously take a point. But that's the only thing close to it. There was no positivity whatsoever. And we were still in the shop, Debbie and I, till about maybe 5 to 6 almost, because we simply couldn't go out in good faith when there's people still outside at that point chatting for McGee to go.
Yeah, it's difficult. I think the kind of situation is as well that it's hard to, it completely overrides all the positives that are going on away from the park. And for me, the kind of most concerning thing personally is my feeling of indifference to it all. I didn't take the result badly yesterday because, not that even I've got a feeling of acceptance towards it, it's just more that the passion's just not really there just now, and that can be kind of put down to a number of factors, I suppose, but I'm just not really. If it wasn't for the fact that my pals went to the football, I don't know if I would still be going, to be perfectly honest, because I just see it more of a social event than anything, than enjoying it. Certainly not the 90 minutes, and I don't even think that's due to results, because I'm well used to his losing by now, but it just has no spark whatsoever going to the football anymore, and I don't know whether that means I'll eventually fall away from it. I don't envisage that will happen, but I feel that I'm not kind of alone in the terms of the feeling of indifference as well. I think people have just, for a lot of people, football has become quite stale, and particularly going to Motherwell games just now has very much got that feeling.
Well, to be honest with you, I can't really disagree. You see, each and every one of the goals yesterday, I was not, you know, I wasn't angry. It's just sort of like, if there it is, you know, what else did we expect? You know, obviously, I enjoy going to the football. It's you know, it's what it is. As you said earlier, except for the last couple of years, you know, for seven years in the trot or something, we performed really well. And that's the sort of, obviously there was no actual success, but, you know, it was a successful sort of period there, and it was the longest period of success I've probably ever seen. It's been a little fun, and whether or not people still expect that sort of thing, I don't know, but it's kind of downhearting when we're so poor. And as I say, the main thing to me seems to be the players don't really seem to care. Obviously, they're going to fight their corner and, you know, say, of course we care, you know, that sort of thing. But there's no emotion shown in the park. And you can tell, you know, when we lose that second goal yesterday, we weren't going to score our own second goal. It just wasn't going to happen for us.
There was a lad actually in the shop just afterwards, and he made a good point that I want to throw in just now. And it's that he's never felt such lack of faith in a Motherwell team in about 50 years worth of watching. Now, I can't speak for him. I can only speak for the last 20 or so years that I've been at Fir Park, but I'm inclined to agree with him slightly. I've never seen us go behind at any point in this season and think, you know, we're still in this. Even the Accies away game at Hogmanay, I'm kind of ashamed to say I walked out maybe 2 or 3 minutes before the end, and it just so happened that when Louis Moult scored, I was at the other gate at New Douglas Park and was able to run back in again. But there seems to be very little positivity around either the club or the fans to say, yeah, you know, we've got the mental strength to come back and still compete. You've quite rightly said, as soon as the first goal goes in, or even the second goal in yesterday's case, the heads go down and that's us. We're more or less out of it at that stage.
Yeah, I think we've only picked up, I think it's 4 points from a losing position this season, which is also quite a concerning start. I think, and I've said it quite a lot of times before, Jay, that our home forum is something that we've always kind of based our success on as well. And this season we've been absolutely stinking at home. The exception, a few pretty decent performances, I would say. I think Thistle and Ross County were both impressive showings. Hamilton at home as well was a good win. But that aside, there's been a few really, really poor performances, and we just kind of added to the list yesterday. You've looked back and defeats to Hearts twice, Dundee, that's just off the top of my head, but Inverness, the 3-0 midweek defeat. So there's been some real shockers in there, and the amount of points we're taking at home is basically relegation material.
Oh no, absolutely. As I said at the start, a home tie against Dundee, particularly considering the run of games that we had before it, and you know after it, when you factor in Kilmarnock's not an easy place to go, you've got Pittodrie, we've got Rangers again. You know the games. You know, you don't want to get too depressed, but you're looking at it thinking, you know, will we actually win again for the rest of the season? But a home game against a team like Dundee, you should absolutely be looking to win. And if you're not winning those games, then you're right, that's relegation material. And of course, when you're losing the games in the manner that we're losing them, it's absolutely ridiculous. You know, David mentions the whole idea of mentality and things like that. I mean, I said to Buster during the game yesterday that, you know, having been going to Motherwell games for 26 years, I've seen, you know, a decent number of poor teams. You know, you think of, you know, McLeish's side that he kind of put together after he dismantled Tommy McLean's side. Look at the Harry Campman side, even, you know, Maurice Malpass's team. Those were really poor teams, but I can't remember ever, you know, going along to Motherwell games, seeing a team that has the ability to lose quite as embarrassingly as we do with this current team. It's absolutely ridiculous to be in a situation where losing 5-1 and 7-2 and 7-0 and 6-0 is something of the norm. Is absolutely ridiculous. You know, I made the point last week because we recorded just as Sutton United were playing Arsenal, and I made the comment there that if Sutton conceded 7 goals to Arsenal, they would have been really disappointed by that. So you factor in, you know, how far apart those two teams are. So for us to be conceding that kind of level of goals against teams in our division is absolutely ludicrous, and it's something that we have never witnessed as a Motherwell fan. I've seen teams that I would consider to be worse than our current team, but there is something fundamentally and seriously wrong with the mental side, you know, with our current team, because there could be no other explanation for it. To react the way that we, to not react in the way that we did to each goal going in, and to just capitulate so easily, it defies. You know, it's just completely unprofessional. It's unacceptable. And that, for me, you know, is something that's really, really worrying, because if you have really sort of fundamental problems in terms of mentality, then how do you get out of this? You know, I'll be honest, I don't pay a lot of attention to the league tables and things like that, pretty much up until the split. So I didn't realise how close we were to the bottom of the league. I knew that it was obviously quite tight down there, but I still thought there was maybe 6 or 7 points between ourselves and the bottom. So to find out that we're actually a lot closer than I realised, and to discover that during the, you know, such a shocking performance, I do think that we're in serious trouble this season. I know that it's you know, it's easy to kind of say, well, you've got Liam Mole, you've got Scott McDonald, you've got Chrissy Cadden, you know, we've got good players. But that's irrelevant at the moment, because whether you've got good players or not, when you're turning up and getting beat 5-1 off of Dundee in 45 minutes of football, you are essentially the worst team in the league. I don't think, on our day, we are, by an absolute country mile, the worst team in the league. I think man for man, we've probably got a better team than the likes of Accies, than the likes of Inverness. But those are tight teams that, when they might lose a game, but they'll tend to lose, you know, 3-1, 2-1, that kind of thing. When we lose a game, we do it in such spectacular style that if we do go down this season, it will be fully deserved.
I suppose if our sub-goalie was to eat a pie in the dugout, it would be the only thing our sub-goalies have done at any point this season, because we seem to only have one goalie jersey.
That's another note. I have everybody telling me when they're in the shop, you know, drop Samson and give this lad Griffiths a go. Griffiths started for the under-20s recently, and I wasn't impressed by him very much whatsoever. That's not to say I don't believe he should be given a shot. However, you know, if we're bringing in a lad simply to fill a number 13 jersey, it's rather worrying when it doesn't look like he can hold his own in the under-20s, let alone in the first team squad, should something happen to Samson.
Well, I think the other fact is, in regards to Samson yesterday, he was so badly exposed by the guys in front of him that, although he, and perhaps even I've been guilty of doing it at times with Samson, he becomes a bit of a scapegoat, but I don't think he could have done very much about what was going on yesterday, particularly when instances like the first goal where Zach Jules just inexplicably heads the ball backwards over the top of him. I think the ground had looked away.
I think yesterday kind of confirmed for me that we appear to have one defender who is capable of talking through a game. Possibly yeah. Two. If you consider that McHugh going to centre half in the second half and things kind of looked a bit, you know, steadier there, that's probably because McHugh was quite happy to actually communicate with the players around them. Without McManus there, the whole defence looked as though they'd never met each other. And I'm going to include Samson in that as well, because it's Samson's job as a goalkeeper to be, you know, constantly communicating with his back line as well. But I didn't get the impression that there was one defender in that back line prepared to actually talk to each other. And that was the big problem. I mean, McManus does get a bit of criticism from time to time. I think people kind of look at him as, you know, ex-Celtic, Champions League, you know, Scotland international. He should be, you know, head and shoulders above anybody else. But I quite like McManus. I think he does a good job. And I think what we witnessed yesterday just confirmed that without him, we are horrifically bad, because he obviously does all the talking, and as soon as you take him out, it just appears to be utter silence. And not just in terms of defending the goals, but in the reaction to the goals. You know, there was none of the defenders, as we've said earlier, were, you know, barking orders at each other or criticising each other or anything. It was just a case of, oh, there's another goal, we'll just saunter back into position. So, you know, if McManus is out now for 5 or 6 weeks, then even if you do end up with Tate coming back in or Hamill coming back in, I think that McManus could prove to be a really, really big loss in these next few games. And if we continue to defend the way we did on Saturday, then, you know, this won't be the last couple of games that we're conceding the likes of 7 and 5.
Yeah, I think another, even like the simple stuff like moving out or moving up the park, the back four, because nobody's talking, they were just static at times. Really basic things that they just seemed incapable of doing because no one was telling them to do it. Whereas you would think that kind of basics like that, as a professional footballer, would be quite instinctive and would just kind of happen naturally, but obviously not in our back four yesterday. We'll move on and talk about Kelly at Rugby Park on Saturday. It's kind of hard to look forward to any game at the moment, but I suppose, David, if you look at it, it's a fixture against a team that are around about us in the league. We've beaten them already at their place this season. I'm struggling to find many more positives in terms of mindset coming into it, but you've got to look at it as a game that we can win. Whether we will or not is a completely different matter.
Oh, 100%. But by the same token, you can say that about most of the teams we've played this season. We can beat the majority of them, but at the same time, we've shown consistently that we can also get, you know, as mentioned earlier, rather spectacularly destroyed by them, for lack of a better word. I do agree that Kelly's a game we should be winning, regardless of whether or not it's home or away. even at Rugby Park, we've beaten them already. If we throw back to the first game of the season, going into that game, I probably would want to see McHugh play in the heart of our defence, because I think he is the only one capable of talking to anyone. McGee made quite a good point when he signed him at the start of the year, that he made him captain, I believe, in his first pre-season game, and he said he's the only one capable in the squad to have done that. Obviously, that's given the squad he was playing on that particular day, but I think he's the only one I can see who's able to command that back four. And it could be something that is worth experimenting with going forward. Having said all that, Kilmarnock seem to be on a relatively decent run of form. I'll use that in inverted commas, over the last couple of weeks, perhaps. The only issue I would point out is that I'm not entirely convinced by the goalkeeper that they've got in at the moment, this lad from Newcastle. So I want to say that it's a game that we will win, but I wanted to say that about a lot this season, and I can't in good faith actually say that I'm confident we will win it.
Yeah, that's the other element that we have to consider is the plastic pitch, which is kind of, if we look at a form at Aki's over the years, it's a factor that has caused us a number of problems. Kelly obviously have the advantage of being able to train in their pitch. They'll, by this point in the season, be very accustomed to it. It's just another thing that makes things a wee bit more difficult in a team that seem to have as fragile confidence as we do. That could also play a part.
Yep. You know, I've said it many a times, and you know fine well, I don't like plastic pucks, no matter, you know, who it is, whether it's Hamilton or Kilmarnock, or I believe teams like Falkirk and that have got one as well. But it's one of those things where I find myself watching players as the ball bounces in front of them and things, and, you know, rather than kicking it on the volley, it hits them in the shin and things like that. But I think, I don't know how I'd like to see his line up at Kilmarnock. I'm looking forward to actually going to Kilmarnock. You know, me and Jay spent the weekend there yesterday, and you know, there's some good guys down there, and, you know, Big Matty's actually from down there as well, so it'll be a good day out. But it's always a fear that the 90 minutes could be the worst part of the day, or will be the worst part of the day. I think maybe what I would do is I'd maybe put McHugh at centre and a half, move Pearson inside, and maybe start Freer if he's got a bit of pace about him. You know, the plastic pack could probably suit him well for put the ball in front of him basically and let him run on it. But again, it's not as if we're known at the moment for a, you know, pacey attacking football or anything. So it's going to be very difficult. But I don't know what it'll turn out like, and I don't know how we're going to end up, how we're going to start. It's not that I'm looking forward to next weekend anyway.
Jay, another one that a player that maybe could do with coming out of the team, even for a couple of weeks for me, would be Chris Cadden, who I think has begun to look pretty tired, and I think it might be a combination of fatigue, and also he's had a few niggly injuries as well over the last couple of months. I thought yesterday he looked basically knackered throughout the 90 minutes, and as a result wasn't really able to get into the game in the way that he was doing in the earlier part of the season. Maybe someone like Freer could be given an opportunity in place of Cadden, for even if it's just for a couple of weeks, to let him recharge the batteries.
It's this, you know, I would tend to agree. I'm a big fan of Chrissy Cadden, and I think you know, we're lucky to have him, and I think he's got, you know, obviously a big future in the game. But I do agree. I think that it's been a good few weeks now before, you know, since you really last felt that he was sort of offering all that he can as an attacking force. He had a really good game up at Ross County, but other than that, you know, he's been relatively quiet. And you talk about him looking tired. I mean, the perfect example of that was when he sort of took the ball off of Joe Chalmers to take a free kick, and then proceeded to just pass it to the one guy in the Dundee wall. It was the most tired-looking free kick, I think, attempt I've ever seen. So I think, you know, that kind of sums that up. But, you know, we need to do something. We need to inject some sort of enthusiasm, because even just from, you know, we're sitting talking about the mentality side of it. If there's a chance someone like Chris Cadden is starting to, you know, adapt to a sort of a negative mentality brought on by playing in the current team, then it would probably do him well mentally to maybe give him a rest as well. How you then replace him, only remains to be seen. With someone like McGee, there's always the chance that you get an absolutely ridiculous lineup or some bizarre shock team selection. In terms of the defence, though, I do agree with David that I think that going with McHugh at the back would be the best thing to do at this moment, because you can't have the first half that we had yesterday and then pick that back four again if you can help it. It's just, there's no point, particularly when you factor in, as I've already said, the communication is vital in defence. Even when you used to play Sunday League football, if you're playing at full-back or centre-half, you still had to be talking at amateur level. So to actually have a professional football team in the top flight in Scotland seemed to be so silent and unable to communicate with each other. You can't do that again. You can't go with the same back four. I thought it was interesting, McGee afterwards. I don't want to kind of pick holes in absolutely everything. He's obviously getting, I've already said, I don't want him as manager. So I don't want to be sort of pedantic and start picking in small things. But in the after-match comments, which, as I said, and I agree with Bust earlier, we said at the time that I thought he handled it really well, and he actually did he spoke quite well after the game, considering how it could have went. But one thing he did say was, as poorly as we defended, that back four is all I could possibly do. That's all I had. That's all that was available. But then he proceeded to go on and say, but we looked a wee bit steady in the second half where we put McHugh at the back and took off Chalmers. You're like, well, it can't be both. I mean, you can't have that's the only back four that we've got and then change it. I mean, it doesn't make any sense. So for me, McHugh has to start at the back, because it's simply unthinkable that we go with that back four again, which is surprising, because in this podcast this time last week, I was saying about how that back four had actually looked, reasonably all right at Celtic Park. But no, there's absolutely no way you can go with that same back and forth. So McHugh into the defence. I'd be more than happy for Pearson to come back inside, because if at all, that's another name that you could possibly drop, because I thought he offered absolutely nothing yesterday. And I'm not singling him out, but as one of the more experienced players in what was a particularly inexperienced side, missing McManus, missing Hamill, Lasley on the bench, I thought Pearson was incredibly poor yesterday, and we should have expected a bit more from him. So we need some changes, at least. As Buster says, I'm looking forward to going to Kelly anyway, because a good couple of mates down there. So as you said earlier, Sparrow, there's a lot of it that's obviously a social aspect. But as for the 90 minutes, I don't see, perhaps don't sound it on the podcast, but that's just because you tend to spend more time, talking about negatives. I do think of myself as actually being quite an optimistic Motherwell fan. But I just, I can't come away from Firth Park yesterday and think that we're going to get anything other than a defeat on Saturday. I saw absolutely nothing yesterday to suggest that we can go to Kilmarnock and get the kind of result that we did last time there, which is unfortunate to say, but that's just the situation we're in. I think it could be a long 90 minutes. And it's getting to the point where if you can go and lose a game 2-1 or 1-0, that's probably a bit of a success at this stage. If you're not going and conceding 6 or 7, then maybe that's actually a positive, which just kind of sums up the situation we're in.
Can I also just go back to Chrissy Cadden? Again, I think we talked about it yesterday, Jay. I think the problem is he's not a right midfielder. I don't think he's a right winger. When he was playing on the right hand side of a three, he looked fine. He looked phenomenal. That's where he was performing well. As a right winger or a right midfielder in a 4-4-2, I just don't think that's his best position or best suited to him.
I'd fully agree with that, and I thought it was rather interesting when we had the English fella Kieran Cadigan training with us, and McGee turned and said that the reason that we didn't offer him a contract was because we didn't want to sign another right-sided winger for him to sit on the bench behind Cadden. So I think that kind of signals his intent to use him as a winger at least for the rest of the season. But I do think that we're guilty of trying to accommodate Cadden at times. The podcast used the phrase a while back that Cadden and Moult were our only two sellable assets. And while I agree with that, I do think we're guilty of, regardless of the team, regardless of the situation, and regardless of whether or not he's fit, Christopher Cadden will be in that squad whether or not he suits the system. There's games when we have played them while they're out of position simply because, you know, as far as McGee's concerned, he needs to be in the team. I do think he needs a rest. And I do think that, or I certainly did think a while back that there were players like Ainsworth who deserved the chance. But given his recent outings, I can't again say that in good faith. I've seen Ainsworth more often in Asda than I have done in the football pitch in the last month. So I think that says all.
He's got a job there. I think that pretty much takes us to the end of this 50-minute mournful podcast. But I think I suppose it's kind of one of these situations where it's very hard to say too many positive things after a defeat like that. But as I say, we go again next week, and fingers crossed we can have a bit more luck. Jay Buster, yep. Thanks as always, guys. David, thanks for coming on, pal. I hope you enjoyed it, and we'll have you back on soon, hopefully.
Yeah, no problem at all. Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to the MFC podcast. We'll be back next Monday. Until then, thank you. Goodbye.
Watching